It's come out in Congress that the Bureau was using the this Foreign Intelligence Act to actually get data for hundreds of thousands of people.
Hey, Kurt. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to it.
So you used to work in FBI cyber. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of some of the stuff you worked on?
Yeah, I'm an attorney by trade. I joined the FBI back in 1997 and went into the New York field office. I worked a lot of criminal. I was in the Iraq War as the head of counterintelligence for 2 years during 2008 and 9. I joined the cyber division within the FBI. I've worked covert. I ran a covert technical operations unit. I ran a computer forensics unit. And I ran an Internet Exploitation of Children task force in Connecticut during my last part of my career.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the interesting cases you worked on? It sounds like you hacked a Ring doorbell at one point.
I represent some of the FBI agents who right now are whistleblowers in front of Congress. But the FBI, the employees in there are great. I've been overseas, I was lucky enough to work the first war crimes case that the U.S. successfully actually prosecuted inside Iraq. The actual trial happened in Kentucky. I've done a lot of work as far as antiquities, as far as cyber. The covert technical operations is basically if you need to have electronics placed. All of that work in the FBI is phenomenal, and it's all black and secret and issues you can't talk about. That being said, we have some of the best people that actually work on that. My unit assisted actually helping to locate and capture Ghislaine Maxwell, who was up the bottom of a guy named Epstein, who was a human trafficker out of New York. We've been asked and had tasked to locate electronically people that had committed murders. My unit used to travel all over the country to assist different field offices and different departments in that type of high high speed electronics work.
Okay, yeah, but I think we see a lot of that in movies, which is usually kind of dramatized and probably glorified. What does that look like in real life? Finding someone through, it looks like cameras, microphones, things like that.
You know, it's for a supervisor, it's a matter of sitting at the desk and hoping nothing goes wrong, because you're responsible for everything that is happens or fails to happen. But my agent, now I had agents working on the covert end and on the cyber crimes. They have a great time, and especially if you want to join the Bureau and do some type of the covert in the computer operations. It's not hard to get into. I mean, because really there's not that many people in the Bureau who really want to do it. People join the Bureau, they want to do criminal, they want to do doing a lot of niche work. But if someone joined the Bureau and said, I want to be in the technical operations, do covert operations, that's not a problem at all. And I have a lot of friends who spent, years, sometimes a decade or more undercover, and they really enjoy it. I personally am I'm the worst undercover there is, so I try not to pretend I am anything but that. I think that we're very lucky. The U.S. is very lucky to have probably some of the top people in the country. And I've had having agents in the U.S., but I've had agents overseas. I mean, I've had agents that were, there was a movie called American Sniper, and I had agents that were deployed in the same area as the last scene of the movie, and they were involved in a very high conflict issue. They weren't expecting that. They were there for another mission, and all of a sudden they got, the place fell apart. There was a lot of violence, and next thing you know, you have agents that were asked to help out the U.S. military, and they did amazingly well. And there's a lot of agents that go travel throughout the world, and that assists different departments, different agencies, different U.S. agencies and different foreign agencies. And it's really exciting work.
So what about some of the recently there's been a lot of drone ops. I know we've kind of briefly mentioned that earlier.
Drones are going to be a problem in U.S. soil. The Bureau has all the government agencies have really tried to get some type of drone activity. If the government agency is law enforcement, and if you go on the border, you're going to see a lot more drone activity. And kind of what happens with technology as inside law enforcement is that there's developments within the military. Especially within Iraq, in between 2000 and 2010, you see the gear that the U.S. military had just transform into some very useful practical gear. Next thing you know, you see a lot of the police departments that have armored personnel carriers. You see the police departments that really look more militarized, but that's because the military gets gear, it works, the law enforcement adopt it. And then within 5 to 10 years, a lot of that gear and a lot of that equipment and training and tactics come back into the States. And that's not necessarily sometimes good. I mean, I'm a proponent of having police in blue uniforms driving squad cars, not armored personnel carriers. But there, the military gave a ton of armored personnel carriers to law enforcement in the U.S. In fact, my town has two. I live in a small town that has almost no crime. We have two armored personnel carriers, and they keep telling people, well, if it floods, we'll use the armored personnel carriers. Like, if it floods, you should use a boat, not an armored personnel carrier. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing with the technology. And that's the thing with drones. Drones are, and as I was finishing up my career and about to retire, we were working on actually a drone carrier, a vehicle that can actually quickly restore a drone to operating condition, put new batteries in it, send it off. And if you're hunting someone who's escaped from prison, a fugitive, that eye never closes. If you can put drones up and hunt, even for a child that's in the woods, that technology is amazing. And it's limited by how much the operators actually get to use it. And that's one of the problems. Like, you have a dog handler, all they do is handle the dogs. You have a drone operator, you may not have that type of constant training. But if you're in Connecticut, if you're in New York, those drones are going to operate in complex airspace. And those drone operators really have to be prepared to be able to not just be the weekend warrior with a drone, but being able to read the aviation maps, being a commercial drone pilot, having extra training. And then also, by the way, they're going to operate FLIR. They're going to operate different types of drones, and are going to have to do it with people below them. So it's I think it's going to be the future for a lot of different things within law enforcement, especially when you go out west where there's a lot of space to cover. The drones are going to keep going. And it's really nice to see. And how much, I mean, look at how drones have advanced in the last five to 10 years. I have some DJI drones, and I'm actually a commercial drone pilot. Those drones are ancient. Now you can buy a $200 drone that is absolutely spectacular. And before, it would cost you $1,500 to $2,000. The reliability on this equipment has gotten amazing. And which I'm always amazed at is if you bring a drone down to Washington, D.C., a lot of them, and you try to take it off, it's not going to take off because the mapping within that, the drone is set up so it won't take off in airspace that may be blocked by the president, by areas, by military areas. So, I mean, the drones are sophisticated. And the Bureau has to work around it. We have aviation assets. We have aviation assets, I still think the Bureau leans much more towards having a living person inside the vehicle, but again, you're not going to get around the drones.
Yeah, it seems like with the drones, there's a lot of useful applications, but there's also a lot of potential problems. I think one around privacy. And then the second is that just about anybody now can buy a drone and potentially fly it near an airport or something.
Yeah.
which can cause a lot of problems. It sounds like some manufacturers do some geofencing. They're a little more responsible, but probably imagine a lot of them that haven't done that. Has there been a lot of issues with that? And kind of how do you combat that?
That's all training. I mean, if you're going to have federal law enforcement doing sophisticated flying, I mean, you are flying in the FBI. The FBI aviation, I've had agents that have been part of not only the technical operations, but working as aviators in the FBI. They're not flying. They're flying in New York, where you have massive aircraft flying around. They're sharing the airspace. You very well may find an FBI aircraft in a place where you would just never expect it, because you would never expect to see a commercial airplane. And I always love it when I see some movie and they're like, oh, they just drove into an airport, and so the law enforcement can't follow them. That's amateur hour. The fact is that any law enforcement agency that's got the proper training, that's talking to air traffic control, they can deconflict having aircraft anywhere around, including over an airport, because the airports have, how the shelving on airspace work. You can have an air traffic control be landing jumbo jets and allowing the New York City Police Department to fly their helicopters right over the top of them. And I think that's really, excuse me, once I'm just going to shut this down. I think that's really amazing, because people really don't expect to see, to think, how much could the pilots have? I've actually had, I had two pilots, that were in the bureau. They were flying their aircraft. The aircraft all of a sudden had its automatic pilot malfunctioned, and it malfunctioned at like 7,000 feet and put the airplane into a nose up to stall and then dropped. And the airplane kept going nose up and stall. And the pilot and the co-pilot were fighting to control this airplane as literally it was falling out of the sky. And at one point, the pilot turned the controls over to the co-pilot, and then started literally tearing the airplane apart to disconnect, ripping out the wires in the fuse box to disconnect the aircraft, all the electronics from the aircraft. And they saved the airplane. And actually, a worldwide notice went out on those on the automatic pilot, basically shutting the use of that automatic pilot down for an update. But the first malfunction occurred because these guys were just flying an incredible amount of hours, and the malfunction occurred, and they were able to save the plane, not from 30,000 feet, but from like 7,000 feet. I mean, which is dramatic. And when you listen to the people talk, the guys talk about how scary it is, it's not when the airplane gets to 500 feet and literally has no lift, lift on its wings coming down, and they're able to save that plane by doing whatever they can. Is, I mean, the fact that they're amazing pilots, and our pilots are flying. I mean, they fly all the time. If the best part is, if you're in the bureau and you want to be a pilot, or you can just ask to become a pilot and you can get into the flight program, and there's a good chance you'll be flying. You'll get your commercial ratings, your multi-engine ratings right up, just as a part-time agent, pilot agent. What's funny is none of the fighter pilots want to do, I think you get like some military guys, but once the military guys have flown, an F-16, and then they're asked, hey, how would you like to go, 100 miles an hour in circles for 5 hours a day? They're like, thank you, but no thank you. I'd rather be on the street working violent crimes than flying circles all day long.
So to shift gears a little bit, you mentioned a little bit about the whistleblowers. How do you think the FBI, let me reset, what do you think the current state of the FBI is as far as kind of the culture? And it seems like there's been a lot of talk about things that have shifted quite a bit.
In the next 6 months, there is a dramatic fight that's going to brew within Congress. And actually, the director of the FBI was in front of the House representative a few weeks ago talking about, it's called 702. And basically what this, there was the Patriot Act back in the early 2000s that came about after the attack on the World Trade Center, and something called the Section 702, which is basically a FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act method of basically wiretapping the internet, and it was never supposed to be mass collection. So this, and I actually helped write or helped review some of the Patriot Act and the FISA laws, for the proposed laws, but this was supposed to be a tool that was there for stopping the next Osama bin Laden. And this was probably the most powerful tool that the federal government had. And this tool basically allowed and allows the federal government to search phone records without a search warrant, which is amazing. And you, with that type of amazing responsibility and power, that normally would have been well protected. Unfortunately, what's happened now is it's come out in Congress that the Bureau is using this Foreign Intelligence Act to actually get data for hundreds of thousands of people. In fact, I was just sitting there looking at the news this morning, and evidently after the discussion that the director of FBI had with Congress, the FBI was actually pulling records, or basically pulling electronic information from a U.S. senator. And this isn't coming from like some crazies out there, or it's actually the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which is a federal court, which is referred to as FISC. FISC identified the fact that the FBI was basically wiretapping a U.S. senator. And I think the Congress right now is the Republicans have basically started to say, we're not going to support this type of amazing power, because basically what happens is it was designed to collect intelligence on foreigners that were outside the U.S. and foreigners that came into the U.S. And it was allowed to collect incidental information about the people that have, that they were, these foreigners were talking to. So it was always going to have this foreign intelligence nexus. Unfortunately, with the FBI, never had to make that a requirement. So they took all the incidental information. It appears they have created a mass database where they've collected everything on anything that came across the, from foreign on the internet, which is kind of crazy, because if you look at AWS, they have storage facilities in Canada. So if it goes to Canada and comes back, next thing you know, all your data, it's very, very possible that your data, everything that you had in that storage, is now scooped up by the National Security Agent and accessible by the FBI, which also means that the FBI doesn't have to go to a court and get a warrant. And it, specifically with 702, if it's a serious crime, they can use that data without ever going to a court and getting a search warrant, which I think is crazy right now, considering the fact that they've actually, the Bureau got caught using FISA against former President Trump when he was running for office. Whether you like him or not, I don't think anybody wants to have any law enforcement agency, any intelligence agency, actually doing intelligence collection against somebody running for office. I mean, that just goes against what we believe in. And so I think that's the first issue. The second issue that's come up, and I'm not sure how many people pay attention to it, was that the Bureau started this idea of preventing disinformation from getting into the internet. They were looking for disinformation, misinformation, which is kind of crazy. So you have the FBI policing speech. So, it used to be when in 1775 and 1776, people would walk up and post something on a wall in Boston saying, hey, we need to throw the British out of here. Now the FBI had taken the position, we can actually remove all those documents, to post anything that the FBI deemed to be misinformation, which is crazy. If you know the people that are involved, the bosses, you'd be like, you would not want them deciding what's real and what's fake. But they were actually going to Twitter, and the bureau employees were going to Twitter and say, hey, look, that's not true. You better pull it down. You better remove this the account for this individual. So basically, the FBI, without any process at all, was denying citizens their First Amendment. Then it got even weirder, because it comes to the realm of you can't make the stuff up. They allowed foreign governments to also use the FBI to transfer requests to social media companies to take down different information. So one country which keeps coming up over and over is Ukraine. The Ukraine intelligence service was allowed to send information regarding accounts and regarding posts against that were quote unquote disinformation, and asked the FBI to have them removed from Twitter and Facebook and all the differing social media. Unfortunately, anyone who knows anything about how intelligence service works, the Ukrainian intelligence service had been infiltrated by the Russian FSB. So the Russian FSB was sending requests to take down anti-Putin speech, anti-Putin comments and social media postings to the FBI. So the FBI was asking these social media companies to remove comments that were against Putin. And and there was a Supreme Court case a long time ago that prevented the federal government from doing this type of activity against the communists, which were, at that point, were the Russians. So 50 years ago, the Supreme Court said you can't regulate speech like that, even if it's coming from a foreign government. You can't. The antidote for bad speech is more speech, and hopefully good speech, not taking it down and having the government monitor it. And for the last few years, the FBI had decided through this foreign influence task force that they were going to affect what was being posted. And then they got into like COVID. So they're taking down COVID postings. They're actually into the, I mean, there's some great, and these are regular news articles, the Associated Press, CNN, you know, MSNBC. They were taking down issues with Hunter Biden's laptop, which, I mean, we've heard about Hunter Biden's laptop for years now. So the FBI is going to the social media groups and say, hey, look, we don't want to comment, but we think you should take all that stuff down. And oh, by the way, the FBI has the laptop while they're doing this. They know the laptop is real, and they're still calling this disinformation when, in fact, whether you believe what's on it or not, the laptop's real. There's information on the laptop, and why would you ever have the FBI running this propaganda scheme? I mean, again, they've done it before, and it's fun to watch, because the best part about the Patriot Act and or actually 702 is you have the U.S. Congress has to renew it every so often. I think it's every 5 or 6 years, but that's coming up at the end of this year. So the FBI is, and the FBI, NSA, the DEA, now remember it's foreign intelligence, but the DEA is there because, you know, we have those cartels, which are a foreign influence, and the different groups are looking to maintain 702. And one of the funniest arguments I've heard is we have to maintain the 702 powers because fentanyl. And you're like, wait, excuse me, you want to eliminate the rights, the Fourth Amendment rights of like nearly every U.S. citizen for fentanyl? I mean, we've had world wars we fought in, and we weren't eliminating Fourth Amendment rights during world wars. The Supreme Court has constantly come back and said, hey, look, during times of major problems, that's when the constitutional rights are more important. I mean, and that was a lesson from the Japanese internments, that we need to, you know, we have to make sure we don't fall into that into the category where we're actually abusing certain classes of people, taking away rights during hard times. So I think that in another 5 months, running up to December, that this 702 issue, which this is why the 702, this is the ultimate hack. Literally, you have something that if I told you 20 years ago that the government could literally get everything they wanted on you and they didn't need a warrant, you'd be like, nah, can't happen. And come to find out, when with Congress saying that and all the news agencies saying it, and I'm not telling you anything that I actually avoided 702 for a reason while I was in the FBI. I did other things, but that was not anything I've ever wanted to be in, or even know about. But this has turned into a big issue, because it will affect, if the FBI can get your medical records, your financial records, and keep them. It's not like they're like going to go get them. They're storing all this data, and they can just access it at any time they want and say, well, it's a serious crime, so we're just going to take this. And by the way, we'll take it without a warrant, and we can use it to find other information and phone calls. And then where are the rights of, associated, with each American, if a government agency can do that? It's just not correct.
It seems like, I remember when I first heard about the FISA thing, which I get it has some use, especially if you're going to conduct an investigation, you don't want to tip off the people you're investigating, especially with something serious like terrorism.
Yeah, but who are we talking about? Are we talking about Osama bin Laden Jr.? I was at the World Trade Center when it collapsed. I had an engine for an airplane. I ricochet right near me. My body's falling down. I had a friend, one of the agents, pulling a fireman out of one of the buildings, and the fireman was cut in half while that was happening. I couldn't see. I'm literally, if you go to one of those movies, the 9/11 movies, I'm in like nearly every one of them. I had the first building collapse. I couldn't see. I went back to the second building. That was the nightmare of nightmares. And if you have an agency have some amazing powers to immediately respond to that type of attack, would have been huge back then. So the U.S. government gave the FBI these powers, and now they're using them against Trump, and they can use them against fentanyl.
It seems like it has a lot of use, but has a lot of potential for abuse, especially out of the public eye, where it takes quite a while. Like it kind of took years for us to find out about some of these issues that came up, and so it kind of removes the accountability, especially as that much time has gone on.
Snowden's, and whether you like Snowden or don't like Snowden, this is what Snowden was talking. Snowden was talking about mass collection of data. That was his deal, using the that the U.S. was actually collecting everything. Okay. 2 years later, the director of the FBI, who was then Comey, went in front of Congress and said 702 is not mass collection. That is not being used for mass. It's not being used for as mass collection. So you would get incidental. We'll come to find out, and from what I've seen in the last 6 months, it has been morphed into mass collection. And even worse, whether you agree with whatever happened at the Capitol, if you think it's a riot or a conspiracy, there were no foreign nationals at the Capitol. But the FBI took those tools that are designated for foreigners, and they actually started doing searches for U.S. sits on something that would be completely domestic. And in the U.S., and a lot of people know this, there's not a U.S. domestic terrorism law. There's a whole bunch of things you can do, but there's no overarching domestic terrorism law. And FISA has no business being in U.S. only, because it's just too easy for an agent to walk over to a U.S. attorney, get a warrant, and then go up on those phones. It's amazing how quick that the U.S. attorney's office can respond, how the courts will bend over backwards to get what they call a Title I or Title III you know, trap and trace, pen registers up immediately to target somebody that would be some type of serious risk. The courts will, the judges and the judges will wait there for, they will wait for an agent into midnight to walk in and bring some type of serious warrant. They'll go over to the field office. They'll let agents go to their house and have warrants signed. It's easy for an FBI agent to get those that type of warrant, that type of legal process. But here, what's happened is they've eliminated the need for it, and that's the problem. Because the whole, if we're a special country, it's not because we have like the biggest. When we do have the biggest kick-ass military in the world, it's the fact that we have certain rights that are inalienable that everyone has, and now we gave them up to the benefit of 9/11 was that we lost Afghanistan, but the FBI said, hey, y'all lost all your rights too, especially your Fourth and First Amendment. You there? Well, I think we've lost our host.
So we had the call drop off for a second. Maybe the FBI doesn't like the conversation.
Oh, how do you know? Every agent that I deal with that has been talking to Congress or the helping Congress with this has been the assumption that the FBI is actually monitoring them, and they're probably right. Back in 2016, and there are news articles written about this, there was a Senator Grassley who was working with some whistleblowers from the CIA, and the CIA actually put electronic surveillance on and monitored the information that was going back and forth between the whistleblowers in Grassley's office, which is completely nuts because the Senate is the oversight for the agency. And then during one of their oversight actions that the Senate was doing, they got records from the agency, and the Senate staff members were going through the records. And this is 2012, I think 12 and 13. The staff members were going through the records that were on computers, and the agency had actually put keystroke on the computers so they could see what the queries were that the Senate and the staff and their staffers were actually looking or making to search the databases. And that was that was Brennan, but that's again, you're dealing with intelligence agencies, and that's really one of the problems is the FBI is unique because it has law enforcement and intelligence agency powers, and that's a tremendous amount of power to have.
Yeah, it seems like, especially with that FISA stuff, kind of before we dropped off, that it just has a lot of potential for abuse. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that it's just not really in the public spotlight. Which for some cases, like hunting, like an Osama bin Laden, I get that, but it seems like the controls that are in place have just eroded over time. But even if they didn't have that, couldn't they just, aren't they still legally doing mass surveillance, just buying data like every other company does, just buying data from data brokers, which I know recently there's been some.
This has happened before. And Congress actually had put rules in about what the government could actually take from telephone companies and other and financial companies. And there's actually a law called the Bank Secrecy Act. The Bank Secrecy Act basically gives the federal government a whole bunch of rights to invade the secrecy and privacy of citizens. But what happens is the Bureau, it's not just that they have the potential for abusing it. It's that in 3 weeks ago, the director of the FBI got up, and a few weeks before that, the deputy director of the FBI, and the deputy director said, well, we had like 286,000 compliance issues, and those compliance issues were actually individual violations of civil rights, because if you violated the rules, then you actually did an unauthorized search in violation of the Fourth Amendment. So that's really one of the problems was to imagine there's only like 16,000 agents in the FBI. And in 1 year, there's 260,000 Fourth Amendment violations, literally like, what, 15, you know, Fourth Amendment violations for every agent in the FBI? That's insane. And they, and the Bureau, I think now the Bureau is cracking down on this. The year prior, they did millions of the, the Bureau was doing millions of these FISA searches. And all of a sudden, now that they've put in controls in, they, the amount of cases the FBI had has dropped 95%. And I know of no agent that would drop a legitimate case, would close a legitimate case just because a law changed, or would stop doing a Title III, a wiretap, just because it got harder to do it. Agents don't do that. They'll continue. But the fact that the FBI would shut down 95% of these of these surveillances means that they probably weren't legitimate, surveillances at all. And though, and those numbers are insane. I mean, millions of these violations. It's crazy.
Yeah, it certainly seems like there just has been a lack of accountability. But how do you balance that? Because as far as like those takedown requests, like there are, like, the, for example, Russia has the Internet Research Agency, which is basically a troll farm, and China has a similar tactic where they flood social media platforms and try to influence opinions and stuff like that. In fact, it's been thought that, like, I think it was Michael Moore held a demonstration, and it was believed that the Internet Research Agency from Russia had, like, worked to make it a lot bigger. They tried to divide us, essentially. So how do you balance those two between, one, like, we don't need the government censoring us, and
well, at the same time, we don't need it. We don't want it. Do you want it? Do you want the FBI to pull your close your account in Twitter or on Facebook because you made it?
No, obviously not.
No, again, what's, at some point you have to believe that people are smart enough to be able to figure out what's real and what's not. And again, but by the way, if a person in the U.S. is working on behalf of another country, that person becomes an agent of a foreign power. That's a crime. And there's no problem. I have no problem with the FBI, with somebody shutting down, getting a warrant. And again, you know, we, and they do this in the FBI. And if there is some type of website that's up, that's being used for ransomware or some other hacking, the FBI will go get a warrant and shut it down. Regardless of whether it's in the U.S. or overseas, they have the agents to have the capability of actually going and wiping out, some type of servers overseas. So it's okay if they have that issue, that they go to a court, they present that information to a federal court, and the magistrate would say, "Feel free, knock it out." I mean, because the magistrates are pretty liberal on what they'll allow, especially when you're looking at cyber attacks. Let's go back into the cyber area. There are very few people in the world that are arrested for ransomware, for any type of cyber attacks, especially in the U.S. because those people exist in Nigeria, they exist in India, they exist in Russia, China, North Korea. It's really kind of hard to get them. And so I didn't like doing cyber crime because there's nobody to arrest. You know, if any other crime, I can go out and get somebody and arrest them. Here, they're all over, they're all in some foreign country. You can shut them down. You can do some technological actions that will offensively reduce it. But you can also do that with foreign governments that are trying to influence the U.S., a U.S. vote. And I have a lot of faith in the U.S. And I'll tell you, I would never be in the Navy. And the reason the U.S. is phenomenal is because aircraft carriers work in the U.S. because the U.S. knows how, people in the U.S. instinctively know how to handle chaos. You can't run an aircraft carrier by having a general tell where the airplanes go on the deck. You have to rely on the genius, on the talents and you know, and training of the specialists, the all of the different non-commissioned and commissioned officers who are able to do it. The Russians have never been able to fly an aircraft, do an aircraft carrier properly because they don't have that that wealth of talent and people that are willing to work in utter chaos. And a carrier is 5,000 people. It's utter chaos that's controlled, that has a rhythm. And again, I think that people in the U.S., we've had attacks on democracy from Russia, but somehow everyone figures out, okay, here's the vote. And what's funny is if Putin gets assassinated tomorrow, or Moscow disappears, Russia's going to collapse. Russia's going to turn in. I actually don't, if Washington magically disappeared, I don't think people would care other than getting checks from, Social Security and from federal government. I don't think people would care. People are more interested. People can function. Local governments can function at a level, and the federal government doesn't drive everything in this country, which is nice. It really is nice.
So if you were in charge of the FBI and had to correct some of these issues, what would you do?
The one congressman said, you'll have to waterboard me to make me vote for the 702 FISAs. I mean, I thought that was funny. The House Judiciary Committee just put out a set of possibilities. One was to move the FBI to Huntsville, Alabama, to get them away from the political. I mean, Washington is the political center of the universe, and to move the FBI out of there would probably deprive it of a lot of power. I think you have to take this very special power, these very special powers that we need and we should have to fight the next Osama bin Laden, have to be provided to an agency that doesn't have the ability to affect U.S. citizens. And you have MI5 and MI6 in Britain. And I was against it. I was against the thought process. And it's come up a few times that the FBI, the FBI was capable of policing itself. And time and time again, it's shown that it's not policing itself. It's using these powers more. It will make the powers as large as possible and exploit them as much as it can. So this group of laws has to be provided to an agency that can't use them on U.S. citizens, because the U.S. government has so many laws that could be used on U.S. citizens. We don't need to have these laws. This should be restricted to foreigners. I was horrified to see what happened in the Capitol, but it was easy enough for anybody to go to a judge and get a warrant. After 9/11, I went to a judge. I went to a judge on a guy who's actually a terrorist financer, and he was involved with a guy named the Blind Sheikh, who was involved in the first World Trade Center attack. He was involved in the one. He was involved in. We believed he was involved in the actual attack on the Trade Center again. If it was just about moving money, and the judge did everything she could to make it as easy for me to move process through there. It was a matter of there was an issue with it, and they literally allowed us to use the equipment within the judge's office to change something, so we had the actual signature blocks and everything correct, because the U.S. will work together and to fight a foreign adversary, but we don't fight foreign adversaries in the same manner we criminally investigate U.S. citizens.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like obviously there's a lot more constitutional rights that come with once you're inside the U.S.
Which, if you don't have a First Amendment right, and you don't have a Fourth Amendment right because somebody in the FBI says we can monitor that, what rights are you really, you have? A Second Amendment right? What right is there? A right to counsel? If you know, what's amazing here is that when this stuff gets heated, they're always going after the lawyers, because you always go after the lawyers. You go after the people that are moving communications, the runners, and the lawyers. And again, here you'll have the Department of Justice targeting lawyers, and the idea that you're going to flip lawyers on their clients, that's kind of outrageous.
Does it go against attorney-client privilege?
I think that is a possibility. I'm also watching where I'm looking at the people that were around Trump. Again, I'm not a supporter of Trump, but I'm looking at the people that are maybe being targeted, and they're attorneys. And the federal government has targeted attorneys in the past for major defendants. There aren't many other rights that really matter. I mean, no one likes lawyers except for your own lawyer. That's kind of how it works. You know, I get calls all the time. I'll get calls by FBI executive, by I do a lot of cybersecurity in my primary legal practice. I get a lot of calls, and you know, you have to be able to talk to a lawyer in confidence, and you certainly don't want the FBI to be listening to those phone calls and have access to them just because the federal government routed those calls to a server in Canada and then routed them back so they could actually listen to them without any type of process.
Hey, well, as we get to the end here, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and taking the time.
No, thank you very much.
If people want to find you for more insights, where's the best spot?
I practice cybersecurity law. The privacy rights is, and I practice privacy law. I'm at kurt@suzdacklaw.com. And if you go online, you'll see my phone number. My clients call me up because my clients are my friends, and I'm very lucky to have a great set of, great people that I'm able to work for. And I have to tell you, within the community of privacy and cybersecurity, that's the best community out there. I mean, how lucky are we to have a whole bunch of great people? And I'm very lucky to have you and other people that I'm able to deal with and continue, because I'm looking forward to going to my next hackers convention. I teach at Quinnipiac University. I teach actual pen testing. I'm probably the only lawyer in the country who doesn't teach hacking law, but actually teaches pen testing to engineers. Every one of my students is smarter than I am and knows more about computers, but I have a more diabolical mind. So that's what I teach them. So I'm around, again, my last name is Suzdak, and you can find me, and I really enjoy the, talking cybersecurity. I appreciate you letting me come on here and talk you to death.